From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. On Election Day, of course, you'll be concerned about who wins or loses. What you don't want to be is apprehensive about the quality of the vote itself. After all, an honest, open vote is what democracy is all about. What the veterans we're honoring today have fought for. And yet Americans have become rightly worried about our voting process. Long lines, charges of suppression, tangled counts, fear of fighting over outcomes. Now the Supreme Court's weighing in this hour on Point, fixing the way America votes. You can join the conversation. Were you worried on Election Day that we'd have not a clear outcome, but a fight? Can we do this better? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. There were plenty of long lines on Election Day. I mean, okay, a line is one thing, but hours? It can get to be too much. Americans, though, were pretty committed to voting on Election Day last week. Here was Los Angeles resident Rowena Williams telling the LA Times that her long wait was worth it.
I came to vote today. I arrived at 10:40 a.m. It is now 1:40 p.m. But this election is very important. Everyone should vote. For me, as a black woman, I remember people dying to give people the right to vote. So everyone should go out and vote, no matter who you're voting for.
Rowena Williams in Los Angeles. There she's into her third hour of waiting. For others, it was longer. On Election Day, 18-year-old Andrea Murias waited in line for many hours outside a community church in Florida's Miami-Dade County. He spoke to NPR about casting his first ever ballot.
It feels more like a tailgate than a voting. I think next 4 years, if it's like this, we'll bring a grill, a cooler, because this is ridiculous.
Florida's vote not in finally till this weekend, last Friday, as that count went on and on. CNN's Ashley Banfield spoke with Florida's Secretary of State and top election official Ken Detzner about the state's election problems.
I can say that it was a learning experience.
Are you sorry?
That we are listening to constituents and that we're going to make a change. I think people expect a change. I think we could have done better. We will do better.
Really? How exactly? Joining us today from Princeton, New Jersey is Nate Persily. He's a leading election law and voting rights expert, professor at Columbia Law School, current law and public affairs fellow at Princeton's Woodrow Wilson School. Nate Persily, we had you all lined up to join us post-election in preparation for a vote count legal mess. Dodge that bullet, I guess, for this year at least. It's a pleasure to have you back with us today. We're happy it worked out as cleanly as it finally did. Welcome back to On Point.
Well, thank you. It is a relief.
You've written since the vote last week that we dodged a bullet this year, but we've still got real problems. What did it look like? How do you sum up what happened on this year's Election Day 2012?
Well, let's be clear that for most Americans, they didn't have to wait in long lines, that it went smoothly. And what we saw on Election Day were sort of the lightning strikes, but there are too many of those. And they were happening in areas where there was real political competition for the presidency. And so we saw hours and hours of long lines in Miami-Dade and other parts of Florida. We saw controversies leading up to the election dealing with provisional ballots, dealing with absentee ballots, dealing with voter verification and identification. So the lawyers were primed for a fight. They fought a little bit in the uptick to the election, but then they retreated once the margin of victory was beyond the margin of litigation.
I mean, I know plenty of people whose biggest fear on Election Day, and everybody wants their candidate, I suppose, but right behind that was, we're going to have a mess here. We'll be back in the kind of a year 2000 nightmare again, that it might be days or weeks or more of fighting and litigation over who had won. Is that a risk?
Well, yes. I think now that we every election looks like it's going to be the 2000 election because we're afraid that we're going to have Bush versus Gore all over again. This time we thought maybe it would all come down to Ohio, where all types of controversies leading up to it. I think that we are sort of waiting in the wings for another 2000-style election debacle. And while it didn't happen at the presidential level, we should – be honest that there are many congressional races that are still outstanding, that there are
– as we speak today, still without a final outcome.
That's right. And there are going to be recounts in Florida and elsewhere. And these types of errors are ones that could make the difference. But as you said, even if it doesn't make the difference, these are still symptoms of a broken, deeply broken system that really needs to be addressed. And unfortunately, at the federal level, it's difficult enough to pass any run-of-the-mill legislation, but election-related legislation, which actually affects the jobs of the people who will be voting on the legislation, is particularly difficult to pass.
Does it have to be this way? I mean, look around the world. How do we do relative to other, developed country democracies in terms of the smoothness, the dependability, the openness of our voting process, Nate?
Well, there are three or four unique problems that we have in the United States. We entrust to partisan officials the statewide administration of our elections. That is not true anywhere else in the world. Usually they have a civil servant who's trusted as a nonpartisan arbiter of elections enforcing the law. We also have extreme decentralization in our system so that we not only push everything away from the federal level down to the states, but the states then push it down to the counties. So the quality of democracy really varies considerably based on the county you live in. And then finally, we have relatively untrained volunteers in the polling place who are the point of contact for most voters, especially in a legal environment where the law is changing, it seems, every month before the election. They are usually not prepared for the contingencies. And couple all of that with the fact that we have more democracy than almost any place in the world because we vote on more things. The ballot in Florida is now notorious from this year because it was over 10 pages long. So if you have that much democracy, that much voting at a time when there's also sort of relatively untrained poll workers, huge decentralization and partisan oversight of the process, it's just a prescription for disaster.
We'll look at how we might make that better. Here was on Election Day. Now, fair enough, they'd had Sandy, but this was ABC News reporting on massive lines at some polling stations in New York City.
Here in East Flatbush, the line to vote stretched through the hall and up the stairs. But wait, there's more. This whole auditorium of people is the line to get on the line, and they are not happy.
It's horrible. The coordinator is not doing her job.
And here's an election night interview. Former Republican governor of Florida turned independent Charlie Crist talking with Chris Matthews, MSNBC, really condemning Florida's voting system here. Charlie Crist.
There's been such an effort to have, voter suppression in Florida. It's shocking to me. We went from 14 days of early voting 4 years ago to 8 days of early voting this time. A plea to have the governor sign an executive order to have more voting hours when people were waiting in lines, two, three, four, some 6 hour waits, which is unconscionable to me.
Former Republican governor of Florida, Charlie Crist, right there. Nate Persily, stand by in Princeton, New Jersey, if you would. Wendy Weiser joins us right now from New York City, voting rights and election reform expert. She's director of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University's School of Law, formerly founded and directed the Brennan Center's Voting Rights and Elections Project. Wendy Weiser, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Is our great big democracy welcoming voters to the polls as it should?
We saw huge problems across the country this year, and unless we fix this problem, we are going to see them year after year. We have a real opportunity now to actually take matters into our hands and make this better for once and for all. This is now the third major federal presidential election since Florida 2000 where we've seen really large-scale problems, and America can really do better.
What are the problems you're pointing to, Wendy?
The long lines were certainly the most visible manifestation of the problems on Election Day.
And long lines a problem because that discourages voting, because people walk away, because it just disrupts people's days? Why exactly?
Well, they certainly do cause many voters to walk away, but it's simply just a national disgrace when Americans take responsibility to get out and try and participate in their election that it should be made so difficult for them. So long lines were certainly a very big problem. And in addition to the long lines, we saw huge other problems that turned voters away. Perhaps the most significant problem that we see year after year is that millions of Americans actually show up at the polls on Election Day only to find that their names aren't on the voter rolls. These are often people who've been registered for years and voting for many years. We also see new registrations. This is perhaps the single biggest problem on Election Day, it not only keeps people from being able to cast a ballot that will count, but that really causes real delays and contributes to making those lines longer.
Why wouldn't they be on the rolls? Is it some mistake in the way they've registered or what?
You know, the problem is that we have a real shoddy, ramshackle voter registration system. We are largely around the country relying on paper voter registration records submitted by voters to local election officials across the country. It is extraordinarily error-prone. It is highly decentralized. And we now actually have the technology to fix that, to do it better, to put in place a more modern voter registration system that uses everyday technology that we use in all other aspects of public life. And if we do that, we can really dramatically increase the number of voters who are on the rolls, dramatically reduce errors, and save money.
Nate,
so that's really the top of the list of things that we need to fix.
We'll look at it. Nate, personally, if we don't get this right, I mean, you know, people can say, well, you know, we get concerned before Election Day, but then the vote goes and we're out of it and we're on to the next thing. I mean, why does it matter, Nate?
Well, you could have someone getting a majority of the votes but not being elected for a particular office. But even beyond that, there's a problem if, this democracy is unable to count the votes and manage an election. It's sort of one of the basic functions of the political system, even apart from the fact that it could end up leading to the wrong leaders being chosen.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about America's problems with voting. Problems at the polls, long lines, tangled counts, low turnout, fear of meltdown, and what we can do to fix all that. Nate Persily is with us, election law and voting rights expert, professor at Columbia Law School, with us today from Princeton, where he's right now at Woodrow Wilson School. Wendy Weiser is with us from the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU's School of Law. On election night, in his very victory speech, President Obama touched briefly on problems with America's voting system.
I want to thank every American who participated in this election. Whether you voted for the very first time or waited in line for a very long time. By the way, we have to fix that.
Well, it sounds like an impromptu aside there from the president, but within the same week, the Supreme Court said it was going to take up the Voting Rights Act and, with that, maybe push back at some of that historic legislation. Shortly after the Supreme Court announced Friday it would hear Shelby County versus Holder, a challenge to the Voting Rights Act, the Alabama County's attorney, Frank Ellis, told Alabama media that law is just outdated.
This is based on criteria that came from the 1964 presidential election. It's 48 years old. And the South has changed in that 48 years. It's not current. It's not relevant anymore.
We don't need that oversight anymore, says the county attorney right there. We'll look at that as well. Let's bring our listeners in right here. Anthony in Columbus, Ohio. Thanks for calling, Anthony. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Well, what do you see, Anthony?
Well, here... I think it was clear that our Secretary of State was doing what he could do in Ohio. I mean, was doing what he could do to keep voting totals down, to suppress the vote. I mean, publicly, he did everything that you could to limit early voting days, to place restrictive rules on the counting of provisional ballots for reasons that it's hard to understand what he's doing. Other than, right, to say that he's trying to suppress the vote. I wonder then, too, okay, so we had a clear election, and as you said at the very beginning, that everybody's relieved about this, that,
yeah,
you know, you don't have to go through 2000 all over again. But, and thinking in terms of the popular vote and in terms of the presidency, what kind of mandate does Obama have? What kind of mandate does the Senate have? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the popular vote margin is. I think we're still counting it, right?
I think we pretty well got it now because Florida came in over the weekend. I mean, President Obama got the electoral vote by a clear margin, nearly 30 or something, and the popular, but it wouldn't necessarily turn out that way. We know with our electoral college system, we have seen it before. a popular vote one way, the presidency the other way. If I may, Anthony, let us pick those up. And Wendy, first to this charge of voter suppression. I mean, what has changed? What has happened? I don't recall this kind of fear and fraught tension over elections in decades past. But since 2000, this seems to be always with us. And this charge that voting has become more politicized, the management of voting has become more politicized. Is that true, Wendy?
That's absolutely true. We have really witnessed an increasing politicization of our rules of election administration starting from Florida 2000 and really hitting overdrive this past year. In fact, over the past 2 years, we saw a massive wave of new laws and administrative actions that would have made it harder for eligible Americans to vote, not just in Ohio, but in 19 states across the country. Restrictive measures passed, 25 new laws and two executive actions, and that's not counting the 41 states total where these measures were hotly contested. This is not seeing no signs of abating.
Why is right this now. Going on? I mean, is it because a problem emerged that needed addressing, or is something else happening? Why?
You know, one of the reasons is that Florida 2000 taught people that the rules of election administration can make a difference to the outcomes. It opened the door to this kind of politicization. And as a nation, we have not exercised the will to set clear national standards so that at the state level, at the local level, we can avoid these kinds of temptations to manipulate the rules for political advantage.
Nate, is there anything stopping Congress, at least in federal elections, from getting involved to there may be politics stopping them, but I mean structurally, could Congress clean this up?
Congress could clean this up just as it passed the Voting Rights Act again and again. It has ample power to both regulate elections and to protect voting rights. There may be some states' rights types who would argue against that. But I think one of the things the Supreme Court, even in Bush versus Gore, the 2000 election case, reminded us is that there are federal interests at stake here. And Congress can act to remedy them. And they did that before and over 150 years ago when we had a contested presidential election, and so they could do it again. Let me emphasize one thing, though, which is that we do focus a lot on the partisan manipulation of the process. The one thing that Florida 2000 taught us when we focused on things like punch card ballots and the butterfly ballot in Palm Beach is that competence and variation in the system are as big an effect on people's votes as these partisan issues. And a lot of these long lines are really the result of resource allocation at the local level, which is really affecting the quality of the democracy.
Competence and variation, meaning we don't have standard machines or even voting tools that happen here. And competence, what does that mean exactly?
Well, so what I was saying before is that the people who man the polling places are often either partisan officials or volunteers who are not professionally trained in order to administer the democracy. You mentioned New York. It's very typical, for example, even in my precinct in New York, for there to be one person who's in charge of registering or checking the registration of everyone who votes. That we had a line of easily 70 people in my precinct as a result. It would not take much for them to have more than one person, more than one book there of people checking them in. When we look at the lines in Florida, it's not because they had some insuperable problem or overwhelmed with voters. If you have more people and more machines per polling place, you'll be able to address those problems. And a lot of those issues are not the direct product of, say, partisan attempts to suppress the vote at the state level, although, of course, when you affect early voting or make elections more complicated, it may have an exacerbating effect. But all of these issues are ones that we have to deal with in addition to the partisan issues.
I mean, Wendy seems to be saying that we do have partisan manipulation, I guess, is the word. In your dissent, you say not, Nate?
No, I said that's one of the three big problems. It's partisan administration at the state level, decentralization so that the counties are very different from each other in the quality of the democracy that they have, and then finally lack of competence in the point of contact with voters. Those are the three big issues, which are exacerbated again by how much we vote in the U.S. I mean, one ironic thing here is if you look at if Florida had a ballot that was maybe half the size of what it was, that maybe you could have cut those lines by a considerable margin.
Let's go to our listeners. Michelle's calling from Williamsburg, Virginia. Hi, Michelle. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Tom, how are you?
Very well. What have you seen?
Well, I feel like this word partisan in this conversation is sort of substituting for a Republican. And I think that the stats that I think your guest Wendy said a few minutes ago about how many laws in the last couple of years have been put into place and how many are contested and all that is a strictly partisan agenda, but it is a part. It is a Republican agenda. I don't think that that's being represented clearly here, because I don't think that there's been any Democrat with small D agenda to change these voting laws like this across the country.
Michelle, let us go straight at it. Wendy, how about it? Is a partisan manipulation here a euphemism for Republican manipulation? That's Michelle's question point.
The past 2 years, the new efforts that we saw to cut back on voting came largely from Republicans, but it has not been exclusively from Republicans. A couple of years ago, we did see some Democratic secretaries of state, for example, issuing rules that would have made it harder for Republicans to vote. It is an American problem, and we need to solve it nationally so that nobody, whether it would benefit Republicans or Democrats, has the opportunity to game the system for political gain.
Well, what about the politics of fixing it then? Have you seen more or less willingness among one party or the other to pick this up in Washington, at least to look at federal voting, Wendy?
You know, at this point, the issue has been highly polarized on partisan lines, with Republicans taking the position that we need to cut back on voting opportunities and Democrats taking the position we need to expand voting opportunities. But we saw some real erosion of that over the past year. We saw a number of Republicans and former Republicans stepping forward and saying, you know, this is not acceptable. We should not be cutting back on voting for Americans. This is not the American way. So we see that there's a real opportunity right now for us to come together to fix the problem. And it's not only the partisan problems. As Professor Persley is making it clear, there's some real investment in our infrastructure, some real need for national standards that would make everything function better for Democrats and Republicans alike.
Nate, what could we watch in Washington then to keep an eye on whether Congress is taking care of this? I mean, people don't want to feel in our democracy that voters are being cut out, or the votes are being messed with, or the voting process is not good. What could we watch? Is there legislation on the table? Where do we look here to see who's doing what?
Well, I think it's been 2 or 3 years since I testified before the Rules Committee on the last piece of election-related legislation. I can't even remember the title of it. It died such a quick death. But I think that if the Supreme Court strikes down Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, as you alluded to earlier, mm-hmm. there may be a policy window that is opened that allow us to deal with a lot of these issues, issues such as ballot design, provisional ballots, some of the absentee ballot issues. Maybe if I had my dream list, creating a national federal ballot just for federal elections, which would be just one page long and have president, Senate, and House of Representative elections on it, and getting some uniformity in the system, particularly as Wendy described, dealing with registration, which has been really the ticking time bomb since the 2000 election, is our antiquated registration system.
So take us to the Supreme Court then. They're going to get involved here. And we heard the Alabama attorney making the case that this 1964 law is outdated. They don't need it anymore in the South. What about that on its merits? These are a bunch of southern states that have to get pre-clearance before a vote from the federal government because of the history of very overt discrimination before they can make changes in how voting goes on there. Do you think these are past their time, Nate? It's time for them to go? We don't need them anymore?
Well, we need national legislation. The Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act is unlike any other piece of legislation in that it subjects certain states and counties and towns to federal oversight.
Because of their history.
But not others. Because of the history. And mm-hmm. Technically what happened, as the Alabama official you mentioned or had on before, is that if you had low voter turnout and a literacy test in 1964, you were then captured under the Voting Rights Act. It was updated a little bit since then to deal with language minorities, but that is basically true. And as a result, a lot of the sort of America's most wanted of bad actors when it comes to voting rights are not captured under this law. So Ohio is not subject to preclearance under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. The state of Florida, only a few counties in Florida are subject to Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, but none of the areas where we've seen problems. It covers, you know, Alabama and Georgia, but it doesn't cover Arkansas. It covers certain, four of the five boroughs in Manhattan, but not but not Queens and Staten Island. So there is a randomness to it, but you know, it's better than nothing, that's for sure. And we saw certain examples of where the federal government was able to prevent certain restrictions from going into effect, even for this election. But it still doesn't cover all the areas of concern, and it covers some areas where we shouldn't have a concern, some places which do a pretty good job. So it needs to be updated, and everyone knew that in 2006 when it was reauthorized. But the problem is that if the Supreme Court strikes it down, then it's not as if it's going to – something necessarily is going to come in its place, but Congress really needs to act.
Wendy, we've got a fairly conservative Supreme Court right now. If they should come in and push back against the Voting Rights Act here, does that remove federal leverage over the way Americans vote? Does it? Will it make it harder for Congress or federal regulators to come in and do something about voting nationally?
It will certainly make it harder to push back on discriminatory voting changes like we saw this year. We saw in a number of cases with respect to Texas, Florida, South Carolina, this kind of federal oversight really made a huge difference in stopping discriminatory new voting laws from going into effect and affecting the 2012 election. We also saw some ways in which it prevented legislatures from even making a discriminatory law in the first place. It is a very powerful provision in a covering, regulating a very thorny area, voting, where there's a lot of incentive for the politicians at the state level and at the local level to try and game the system and to try to use minorities as chits in that process. So it is an incredibly important provision. And I should add that even if the coverage isn't perfect, the states that are currently covered by this provision are much more likely than any other states to actually pass discriminatory new voting laws over the past 2 years. Of those nine states, seven in the past couple of years have passed new voting restrictions. So it's a fairly good proxy for where we are likely to see discriminatory problems.
And headed for the court, some answer out of the court by next summer sometime. Arlene in June. Arlene in Somerville, South Carolina. Arlene, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you see?
I actually worked the polls last Tuesday here in Somerville, and your guests bring up some really great points. The one that was touched on earlier is the length of these ballots. They're so lengthy sometimes, explanations, things that people have to read and digest and decide, and it's legalese, it's difficult to understand. And it takes, we could actually have forced people to finish their voting in 3 minutes' time. We didn't do that. And we didn't have super long lines, but I understood that in Florida the ballot was like, I don't know, pages and pages long. And that's what causes these long lines. These people just aren't sure what they're voting on until they get into that booth, and then they've got to figure it out.
Yeah, I think it was something like 10 pages in Florida. I mean, Wendy, that's got to be a challenge for voters stepping in right there. But who's out there to pay attention to that, to say, wait a minute, you know, we got too much on this ballot? Or is that just the way it goes? Legislators put it on, and referenda drives put it on, and there they are.
You know, in the states that have referenda, that is just the way it goes. There are administrative ways that you can alleviate those problems. You can make sure that people are voting simultaneously, have enough booths where people can be filling out their ballots. In Florida, and in most places, they'll be filling out paper ballots. They don't need to be occupying a machine when they're doing that. We can also be educating people in advance, sending out sample ballots so people are aware of the issues when they get into the polling place.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about America's problems with voting, problems at the polls, long lines, tangled counts, low turnout, fear of meltdown, charges of voter suppression, and what we might do to fix all that. Nate Persily is with us. Wendy Weiser, lots of feedback. Saeed says, I waited 7.5 hours to vote down here in Miami-Dade County. The Republicans, he writes, have succeeded in suppressing my vote because I will never vote again. 7.5 hours just to vote? Are you kidding me, he writes. Maverick says, get rid of the Electoral College. It's an antiquated system from an era when it took days, weeks, months to get the vote in to Washington. Move it online. Everybody has access one way or another, library, computer, smartphone these days. Do it online. Carol says in the state of Washington, everyone votes by mail. You can either drop it in a mail your ballot in, or drop it in one of the drop boxes available around towns. We get our ballots in Washington State, that is, 2 weeks before Election Day. No hassles. Time to look up the resolutions. Fill it in at your leisure. Ashwin says, modernize. How is it possible that we cannot have an Apple-esque voting interface with a Vegas-level security system? Why cannot it, for the love of freedom and all things Eagles, he says, be uniform across the country? Sound like good questions. Rob Ritchie is with us right now from Fair Vote. He's executive director there. National Electoral Reform Nonprofit supports a national popular vote for president, universal voter registration, and a constitutionally protected right to vote. Rob Ritchie, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be on the program.
You hear what our voters, at least our listeners right there, are saying. Come on, make this easier. Let me send it in by mail, or put it online with a foolproof security system, or get rid of the Electoral College. Let's think big here. What do you say, Rob?
I think so as well. I think voters often know what to do before some of our elected officials. But certainly, when you look at this election, I think part of the context is it isn't the same everywhere. And it's true for state legislative races. Only 60% of them even had two major parties running. If you look at congressional races, barely one out of five hotly contested at best. And then you look at the presidential race, and of course the Electoral College system that we have in place now divides those states between, the swing states where turnout was about 8% higher than the 40 states that the campaigns basically ignored.
And because voters can feel the urgency of the importance of their vote there. A popular vote swinging this would mean everybody's vote mattered.
That's right. One person, one vote. Person with the most votes wins. It's, part of the anachronism that is our system, that we don't have those two principles for president. And, we really see it playing out in a lot of ways, and a lot of this sort of fighting over, relatively small numbers of votes in swing states because it's so essential to win those states. And then they, treat the other states very, very differently.
Entropy is hard to get past, but do you feel voter apprehension about outcomes and the way it's working as leverage to make some changes here? I mean, I hear a lot of serious people who were really worried on Election Day saying, I don't want this to end up in some weeks-long melee.
Right. Well, I think – here's the exciting part. I think there are solutions to all of this. Wendy and Nate have done a good job articulating several that should happen. And on the presidential election system, we don't have to wait for Congress to act. In fact, states are taking a leadership role, which the Constitution gives them the power to do. There's a nifty proposal, the National Popular Vote Plan, which eight states in D.C. have passed, which if states keep passing it, and essentially there's a lot of states out there where there's a lot of interest in moving to a popular vote, they can establish an effective popular vote for president where the candidate with the most votes in all 50 states wins in 2016.
Well, we'll see what happens. Hillary in Somerville, Massachusetts. Thanks for calling, Hillary. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. So I think that voting day should be a national holiday. I think it's ridiculous that people have to go to work or worry about, the time it takes them to vote. I know myself, I had to go twice to vote because the first time I waited for an hour, then I had to go to a meeting and then come back later.
Wow.
But, think about the people that don't have flexibility in their work schedules. And I just think it's ridiculous that if we're electing our national officials that we don't have that day off.
Let us pick it up. Nate, personally, what about it? Put it on a weekend or put it on a national holiday?
Or give people a week to vote. There are all kinds of ways that you can deal with this problem of the trade-off between work and voting. Most countries do have it as a national holiday, and most countries have more than one day of voting. Some countries even have compulsory voting where you get fined or otherwise punished if you don't vote. So there are all kinds of ways to deal with this. I don't see any movement to make it a national holiday, but I think that since we had over a third of the electorate this time, maybe even more than 35% voting early, there is a kind of move in that direction, maybe sort of inadvertently, to extend the voting period beyond a single day.
Yes, so evolution going on there. Jonathan, Plainville, Massachusetts. Jonathan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I'm down here in Plainville, and it's a town of only 8,000, and I feel very lucky. We have one polling place, and no one ever waits more than about 5 or 10 minutes to vote.
Lucky you.
And it's very quaint, and you get to nod and talk to people you know, but it's so old-fashioned, and I kind of feel that I'm a parent having that conversation with a teenage child and saying, here we are again. I think I called in to Talk of the Nations 16 years ago.
Oh, boy.
Same conversation
right.
that we're having.
Right.
Now, we have the technology, like someone said. I think that voting is too important to be in the purview of the states. I think that the Supreme Court should look at it and saying, you know, is this challenging people's rights and freedoms? And if that passes the test, then it becomes a national voting right.
But the case the court just agreed to pick up would seem more likely to push it the other way, back to states, saying federal government back off a little bit there.
Well, maybe this should be made like a national X Prize, that companies that are so competent in making gaming things like ATMs or lottery machines, some of these companies must have the technology, and make it a contest.
I like your idea. We'll look at how we break out of the politics of what the status quo on this, Jonathan, or even sort of sliding in worse directions. Let me hold that one. Timothy in Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Timothy, thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
As being active military, I've only been able to vote absentee ballot because, you know, I'm never home in my home state of West Virginia during the elections. And my experience with the absentee ballot system is I don't know what I'm voting on half the time.
Why?
And because it just mentions the name. It doesn't mention their stances on the party or anything. And when you're deployed, I don't have a lot of time to do personal research, so it's more or less I end up voting all on one party, and I didn't even get my ballot in 2008 due to the mail system. I never received it.
So absentee ballot, even that not working out perfectly for our active duty guy, Timothy. Timothy, thanks for that report. I want to look at online voting and how that might work. I mean, is that the answer here, Wendy? Is you know, we've got a bunch of people saying use technology to solve some of these problems, and it does seem crazy that we can't get past that. On the other hand, you've got security concerns that come in on that front, Wendy.
Absolutely. We certainly do need a modern voting system that works for all Americans. The technology for online voting has not yet been perfected. There still are some security concerns. But on the voter registration end, that's somewhere where we actually have the technology already. It works. They've been able to overcome any security concerns. And that's somewhere where we can really move forward right now to fix the system. We need to be exploring other ways to ensure that people can use technology to improve the voting system as well.
Rob, do you think there will come a time when some kind of digital voting could be both more effective than the mishmash of things we have now and secure?
Well, there's some real skeptics out there, and that I think we need to listen to carefully and obviously move very, very carefully on that. And it certainly doesn't seem like we're there yet, as Wendy said. I did want to get back to what the caller, a couple callers have mm-hmm. really made a case for sort of indirectly, which is, I think, having much better voter guides, which some states do. And it's sort of part of like not running democracy on the cheap, you know, that we actually invest in the effort of getting people information. But some Western states, send out voter guides and sometimes sample ballots. And so the nice thing that you can do is, one, you can know a lot more about what you're voting on, which the caller just alluded to, the difficulty when you don't have that. And then also you can actually fill out your ballot. You can find out there's certain quirky ballot questions you didn't know were there and so on, and then come in with that prepared ballot, and it's a lot better experience at the polls. And that's the kind of thing that I think we can do. And a final thing I'll say is that a lot of these good ideas are already happening. We just don't always learn from them, and we don't make sure that others act on them, and we don't have sort of minimum standards. But I will say the one good thing of having a decentralized system, if we did it right, was you can have advances. You can have great ideas. You can have good ways to get better poll workers and so on. And then, but we should then ratchet up the level of standards for everyone else based on knowing how some people can do it.
Well, I want to look at how that might work because we don't do it every day. It's easy for these things just to slide and slide and slide, as one of our callers pointed out. Benjamin in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Benjamin, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to know where funding comes from different polling sites for their voting, resources. Even here in the small town of Bowling Green, we waited pretty close to 2 hours to vote.
Wow.
And when we got to the front of the line, it was just simply, you know, one book with the whole alphabet in it, full of last names.
Yeah.
You had to wait for this one person to find your name. And, you know, pretty much everybody in our precinct had to go through this one lady.
It seems like a horse and buggy kind of situation there, waiting 2 hours for one book. What about it, Nate Persily? Where do the finances lie here? Is it all local or state?
They mostly come from the counties, and so therefore the costs of democracy are traded off against everything else, education, security, et cetera. But let me try to stop the slow march toward fetishizing technology here. This is not – the problem is not one that – this is not like rebuilding the space shuttle. I mean, we are doing the same thing that we've done for 200 years. We just need to dedicate more effort to it. And to do it in a little bit different way. I mean, this type of problem where you have one person who has the book is not an organizational challenge. So you have two books or three books and you have more people who are doing it. The problem with the long ballots, I mean, I proposed one solution earlier, which is that we should have a national federal ballot, which is one page long, which is paper and which you can just check off president, Senate, House of Representatives.
Yep.
You can have the state election separate, and that would you can do it. You could even have it hand counted, and it wouldn't be rocket science. There are many other countries, much poorer than we are, much technologically sort of less advanced, who are able to run national elections and get it counted within a day, and they don't have the problems we do. And so, a lot of it is these structural problems I was talking about before: the partisanship at the state level, but also the decentralization, and so the lack of dedication in having people as the point of contact for the voters. I really think that we made a mistake after the 2000 election by focusing on punch card ballots, and then a lot of states rushed in to bring these so-called DRE machines, which are like
digital?
The ATM style machines. And I'll tell you what happened in Florida the first time they used it, which is that the first in the primary election that succeeded the Help America Vote Act and the new technology, they came in with these spiffy laptop voting machines.
Yeah.
They were working for the first 10 minutes in Palm Beach County. And then you know what? Like any other laptop, they went kaput because no one had plugged them in. And so then what they ended up doing – this was actually Miami-Dade – they ended up having to hire their IT system folks to come out and man the polling places of the subsequent election, right?
Yeah.
These are not – again, you know, it is not brain surgery. And there are ways to do this which don't require us to write any more computer code than already exists.
Wendy, do you see a fetishizing of technology as the answer here, or do you think it needs to be part of the answer?
You know, the technological solution I'm talking about is not a very complicated one. This is just to upgrade our voter registration system. It is highly consistent with what Professor Persily is saying. We actually have a system in place, and we're just not using it right. There are solutions to most of these problems, and we're just not implementing them. We need to have better national standards to do that. I should add, there's also a federal agency that we've actually allowed to languish that was put in place after the 2000 election to provide this kind of technical assistance to states and counties across the country. It has been sitting there with no acting commissioners throughout the entirety of this election season. That could have been another way where we are using existing resources to actually improve the system, and we didn't.
So let me ask the three of you. I mean, we've got people concerned right across the board here. They don't want voter suppression. They don't want the vote to be hacked if we should go in a technology direction. They don't want people turned away who are, you know, rightful voters in our democracy. And we don't want to get into fights over the outcome that lead to, you know, I mean, we had kind of brawls and all kinds of nonsense in 2000. How do we work the politics of this, Rob, so that we get change here? What are the pressure points that look most effective to you?
Well, it's a good question, and I think Congress is a place that we know can act. I think there's some real justified skepticism that they will. One project that we're promoting is an idea that localities can take a lead role in sort of embracing the whole goal of voter participation and protection of voting rights. We have PromoteOurVote.com, where a city can or campus can, you know, pass a resolution committing to the value. You know, we want a right to vote in the Constitution, but with that, we commit to doing a lot to promote voting rights. I should say, by the way, that it's not just presidential elections. You know, we have elections all the time,
sure.
And turnout is a lot lower in those other offices. In fact, we looked at mayor elections in the top 22 biggest cities, and the highest one was 42% of registered voters, and some were down in single digits. Like, there's a lot we can do. Yet at the same time, we need to keep pushing Congress, and maybe Congress will act, and we certainly should look for incremental, you know, at least steps like reviving the EAC, as Wendy just said, and, you know, just keep after it. And finally, national popular vote, this effort in states for the Electoral College, I think is a really exciting one that people can push in their states.
Wendy, we've heard a lot about demographics since the presidential vote last week. I mean, are there entrenched reasons that somebody might not want full voting in this country?
Well, I think that many politicians might be tempted to try and put in place voting rules for their own political gain. And if there are certain demographic groups that they're worried about voting, they might actually try to prevent them from voting. It is some reason why we really want to have national standards so that we can overcome these kinds of temptations and this manipulation.
National standards, talk to Congress, watch Congress. Nate Persley, are you optimistic about tightening this up, improving it?
I don't think you're going to see sweeping legislation, but maybe you'll see something incremental probably next summer after the Supreme Court strikes down the VRA.
Well, let's not wait till the next time things get tight and we all get worried. Nate Persley, Wendy Weiser at the Brennan Center, Rob Ritchie with Fair Vote. Thanks to each of you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.